Cyprus Banks Reopen.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. Banks in Cyprus have just reopened for the first time in 2 weeks, although there are tough restrictions on just how much cash customers can withdraw and what they can do with that money once they have it. The BBC's Rob Young is outside a bank in Nicosia, Cyprus, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, so what's happening where you are right now?
Well, I'm outside a branch of Laiki Bank in the center of Nicosia. That's the second largest lender on the island, the one which is being wound down as part of the international bailout deal that was agreed at the beginning of this week. There are about 30 or so customers waiting to go through the doors. The opening of the bank has been delayed, it seems, but the mood in the queue is very calm. People are politely exchanging stories of why they're here queuing for the bank to open. There is no sense of panic or of anger with the authorities. Most people are pretty stoical about it, really.
Although I bet that most of them are not going to be making deposits into the bank.
I have met one guy who was going to deposit a cheque. Of course, he's hoping to turn that into cash, into liquid funds. You're right, people are here to draw money out. There is a daily limit on the amount of cash that individuals can withdraw of 300 euros. One lady I spoke to in the queue has been here for a couple of weeks. She's over from New York. She only bought a one-way ticket, so she's been waiting for a week and a half now to buy her return ticket. So she's got to come for 3 days in a row to withdraw up to 900 euros so that she can buy her airfare to get home.
And do people that you're talking to in Cyprus think that this was the right medicine for their problems?
Well, people here got a real fright when the European authorities and the leadership of Cyprus discussed publicly taking a levy from the savings of everybody on the island, from banks. And so they regard the capital controls, as they're called, as sensible, because people want to see the sector not only survive but thrive again.
The BBC's Rob Young in Nicosia, Cyprus, for us this morning. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Well, today, Michigan officially becomes the nation's 24th right-to-work state. Under the new law, workers can opt out of paying union dues and still retain benefits. Marketplace's David Weinberg reports.
If you were to walk into the office of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters today, you would see lots of people wearing red shirts as a symbolic statement against the new law. But the biggest changes won't be visible.
It's almost like, you know, the loss of somebody you know. It's going to be looming over all of our heads.
Lisa Canada is political legislative director of the Carpenters Union. She says one of the biggest effects has been the number of calls she gets from members.
We've started to notice things already because there's so much misinformation out there about right to work.
Because workers can get the benefits of a union without paying dues, union leaders worry that they will have less money to contribute to political candidates in elections. Union leaders are also concerned that opting out of dues will cause divisions.
If a worker decides that he or she doesn't want to pay their fair share, their coworkers are going to be pretty unhappy about that.
Bob King is president of the United Auto Workers. He says many of the changes will come when union contracts with employers expire and both sides sit down to negotiate. That's when the effects of right to work will have their biggest impact. I'm David Weinberg from Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixing global trading this morning, down 0.7% in Hong Kong, up slightly in Singapore right now, up 0.2%. The merger of American Airlines and U.S. Airways is one step closer to reality after a bankruptcy judge approved the deal yesterday. The Justice Department and U.S. Airways shareholders still have to give the merger the okay. Meanwhile, in Japan, the head of the central bank said today that the government's growing debt load is not sustainable. Japan is in the midst of aggressive monetary and fiscal stimulus to get the economy moving again. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow lost 33 points to close at 14,526.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
It is said to be the highest price ever paid for a piece of artwork by a U.S. collector, $155 million for a Picasso. The buyer is reportedly Stephen Cohen, the billionaire owner of SAC Capital Advisors. That's a hedge fund. The seller, casino mogul Steve Wynn, who apparently paid less than half the price when he bought the painting. Shannon Mullen reports.
Michael Moses is co-founder of the May Moses Fine Art Index, which tracks the value of art. He says the average compounded annual return is about 8%.
If you look at paintings that cost or were originally purchased for over $1 million, that return on an annual basis drops to about 2%.
Moses says preserving wealth is one of the biggest reasons why wealthy people buy art, besides the thrill of the chase and the fun of showing off a famous painting to your friends. And this is just Cohen's latest acquisition. He's known for having one of the world's best private art collections as part of his diversified portfolio. And Cohen's Picasso will most likely continue to increase in value. New York-based art advisor Renee Vara.
These artists just continue to push the numbers. They're better than buying, gold as a commodity.
Vara says painting sales over $100 million are increasingly common these days. But collectors hoping for a bump from this sale are out of luck, unless they own a Picasso, too. In Boston, I'm Shannon Mullen for Marketplace.
So what is the most you have ever paid for a piece of artwork? You can go to the APM Marketplace Facebook page right now and let us know. And if you've got a comment about anything you hear on the Marketplace Morning Report or a question, go to marketplace.org and click on the link that says Contact. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.